This is Studio 395, a production of the Department of History at James Madison University, and its Historical Research Methods course, History 395. I'm Liam Mullen, a junior history major. I'm speaking today with Matthew Bentley, a history major at James Madison, and the author of the paper, Submarine Warfare in the Confederacy During the Civil War. Matthew, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Liam?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. So, getting right into it, why don't you give me a brief synopsis of why you chose submarine warfare in the Confederacy?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I had a particular interest in this topic just because I feel like it's kind of an interesting anecdotal thing. I just feel like it's something that not a lot of historians really like to cover. You know, given their kind of crude nature of the crafts, they weren't super effective in a lot of battles. So you don't really see that many historians really going in depth with this topic. So I just felt like it was something that needed to be more explored.
So why did you choose the Confederate side for submarine warfare specifically in comparison to the Union or, you know, altogether the Civil War?
Well, first of all, the Union side didn't really have a robust submarine kind of network. They weren't really that invested in it. And that's really the argument in my paper, is that the Union really didn't have no reason to invest so much time and money into a submarine program. You see, as the Confederacy, they, in the beginning of the war, the North essentially shut off all their essential ports, and they were cut off from a lot of their trade networks and resources. So it was really just sort of a desperation, and they just needed some sort of craft or any sort of attempt to really just break these really strict these blockades, or else they were essentially screwed for most of the war. And that's really why you see much more of a robust kind of network of creation from the Confederacy that, as opposed to the Union. It's really just a large disadvantage that they started with.
Sure, of course. So diving into your paper, I'd like to look first at the types of sources that you accrued for your paper, just looking at different types of primary and secondary sources, mainly naming ones that you felt were most insightful in terms of giving you a good idea of the Confederates' efforts and their shortcomings.
As far as primary source evidence, the best things I really found, or the most insightful kind of sources, were there were several correspondences with James McClintock, one of the creators of the Pioneer, the American Diver, the predecessors to the Hundley, in which he was writing with other engineers after the war, and he was talking about the specifics of the crafts, their design, what was wrong with them, basically really in-depth coverage of every single craft that he helped create. I also found a great compendium of first-hand sources and accounts from crew members of the Housatonic, the ship that the Hundley sank, and a lot of those were just extremely helpful because they really got in-depth with the position of the Hundley, the time of attack, what happened, everything, all that stuff.
Sure, okay. One of the main themes in your paper that I continually observed was that there were a lot of setbacks through mainly human error and obviously just trial and error, just figuring out how to get these naval vessels to actually function.
Right.
So looking into one primary source of your paper, there was a specific instance where there was a failed attempt because a manhole cover on the submarine wasn't closed.
Right.
So it kind of begs the question, what kind of soldiers or volunteers really contributed to the Confederacy in their efforts of making submarines? Were these people vetted, or did they just, you know, come right out?
Yeah, that's also an excellent question. Great interviewer.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was mostly soldiers that volunteered. You know, as I was saying earlier, the South really didn't start the war with a great advantage, both navally and on land.
Sure.
They were basically the underdogs from the beginning of the war. So they didn't have too many volunteers to even, you know, accrue, or too many soldiers, sorry, to really put towards that program. So really the people we saw operating the prototypes in the Hundley were more volunteer soldiers that were part of the Confederacy, but some of which I've seen accounts where they were mostly, they're either wounded soldiers that weren't too helpful. They're older guys, some of them. But a lot of them were mostly volunteer soldiers that usually weren't as fit for more conventional warfare. So that's really why we saw a lot more user error in some of these earlier crafts.
Sure. So, I mean, with the, you know, the submarines being a plan of desperation, they also used any, you know, shortage of soldiers mm-hmm. or people who really couldn't fight for them as the operators, mm-hmm. just as like a backup plan, really.
Yeah, it really does exemplify kind of their desperation for any sort of advantage, because these people were not, you know, extremely qualified, or as qualified as you could be in
yeah,
a Civil
sure.
War
I mean,
submarine.
It's a new
But it was definitely kind of grasping at straws.
Definitely. Okay. Another type of setback that I noticed you talked about a lot in your paper was a surprising amount of storms, or maybe it wasn't the storms that were really causing the problems, but just the submarines not being able to adapt to more harsher, mm-hmm. Natural climates. But there were definitely a few instances where the submarines were lost due to a storm, and obviously mm-hmm. Barely on the frontier of, you know, having an underwater vessel. There was no way for the Confederacy to actually retrieve these vessels once they sank.
Right, of course.
So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more in terms of how maybe a lack of storms or just, you know, better climate conditions could have aided in the South's more consistent progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll just kind of start with that question. These crafts are inherently, they're not well optimized for any sort of water. Mm-hmm. They struggled with even the clearest days, the clearest waters, the flattest waves. There's not a lot of room for innovation in that department.
Mm-hmm.
But what is interesting is that the Union and the South did lose two of their submarines in the same storm on the same night, which is more of just kind of a cool historical anecdote than
sure.
A major development. But that is a good point to make, that these crafts really weren't fit for any sort of storms or anything. So that's why you see their development in ports in very, very secluded areas as opposed to open ocean.
Sure.
And when they did eventually test them in open ocean or more real-time stuff, that's why they either were lost to storms or they sank or they weren't, you know, operable.
Of course,
so,
yeah.
Weather was a major factor.
Okay. So, obviously, reiterating the one of the main themes of the paper was that the submarine warfare was definitely an act of desperation just for the South to somehow get an edge over the Union, who had a lot of military advantages and strategic
mm-hmm.
advantages. The question, however, should the Confederacy have focused their time and efforts elsewhere to another possible solution? Or even specifically, you mentioned briefly three different types of naval warfare efforts that the South tried to
mm-hmm.
Push forward. Yeah, three types
made.
Of ships.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The submarines, the ironclads, and the torpedo boats.
Right.
I understand that the focus of your paper was the submarines, but did you come across any readings or any sources that suggested that maybe the South should have focused their efforts elsewhere in terms of the ironclads or the torpedo boats, or was the submarine sort of just their last-ditch effort, all chips in, to try and help give them an edge?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did run across a lot of those other types of vessels, and I think strictly when you're looking at it in terms of military warfare, I would say the ironclads were definitely way more viable.
Mm.
They were the only really vessels that the Union were scared of. You know, as a result of their creation, the Union started using them themselves, whereas with, like, the Hunley and their submarines, they kind of gave up on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's one single type of vessel that they could have made that would have saved them. I think all three of those types, the ironclads, the torpedo boats, and the submarines, I think they all just kind of exemplify this desperation for innovation. There really was no right answer, and I think the South kind of knew that. So that's why they really put so many efforts into something new, like, oh, the submarines aren't working, well, we need to try an ironclad. If the ironclads don't work, well, we have a torpedo boat. It's just nonstop innovation. Anything they could do to really just kind of break their blockades and gain any sort of upper hand. But I think it is interesting to note that they did like to experiment outside submarines. So, but yeah, great question.
So as you come to the end of this interview and the kind of the conclusion of your paper, really it'll you know, it comes down to the question of how do you feel about the South's efforts overall about the submarine warfare? Do you think that it was something where if they had more time or if they started it earlier on that it could have been a much more viable asset to them? Or is it something that was just really overall just a wasted effort?
I think if the war had waged longer, we probably would have seen more more developments from the South. And I'm not going to sit here and say that their submarines were incredibly effective. All of them either failed or they sank or they killed someone.
Sure.
So they're not incredibly effective. But I can't deny that they did kind of spark innovation, not only among the Americans, but really just naval warfare throughout the world. You know, the Hunley's attack on the Housatonic was the first documented successful submarine killing or, sinking of a ship.
Sure.
So I think it is important to acknowledge their shortcomings and not see them only as, these great marvels of technology. Because they were marvels, but they were not, flawless. But I would say, yes, it is important to recognize their importance, to phrase that. But yeah, that's kind of my stance on the whole issue.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for giving me the time. Thank you for listening to Studio 395. More interviews on a wide range of historical topics and subscriptions to our podcast are available on our show page at sites.lib.jmu.edu/studio395. To learn more about the historical major at James Madison University, please visit www.jmu.edu/history.com.